My name is Jeff Harbach. I'm the CEO of Coffin Fellows and the host of the Coffin Fellows podcast. This season, our podcast is produced in partnership with Mighty Capital and features different Coffin Fellows as co-hosts. In this podcast, we dive deep into the personal narratives of some of the most successful names in the venture capital industry. But we're not here just to explore their highlight reels, however impressive they are. From failures and formative learning experiences to inflection points and aha moments, we discuss the real, authentic journeys that each individual goes through to become the best version of themselves in order to best serve the entrepreneurs they invest in. Covering various themes in venture capital investing, we speak with the world's top leaders in capital formation, all from a place of authenticity and vulnerability. Together, we'll unravel what truly makes a great venture capital investor. Now let's meet today's host and their guest.
Hi, and good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. I'm Renan Ashkenazi from Grow Ventures, and I'm excited to host this series on winning the deal, the before and the after. Let's hear from my guest today.
Hi, everyone. I'm here today with the one and only Adam Goldburn. Adam is a partner at Lux, and he's been with the firm for over a decade now, if I'm not mistaken, from associate to senior associate to principal to partner. Not before. He was a postdoctoral fellow of neuroscience at Weill Cornell Medical College, right? Did I pronounce that right?
Yep.
Okay. He also has a to die for Australian accent, has founded and incubated a number of Lux company. And basically, I feel, Adam, that what you've been spending your time is making the rest of us look bad. Thank you.
Not true at all. So thank you for the introduction.
Hey, Adam, it's great to have you with me today. And welcome to the Coffin Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So, you know, our general topic is winning the deal. And I wanted to focus on conviction. And just to finish, you know, glorifying you, it's really difficult to think of a lot of people who are more suitable to talk about this, because you not only have a gazillion and a half, I think, on last count portfolio companies, but you've also been doing this for a while. And I think this is the most interesting point. I think the most challenging part for you is that you're investing in like hardcore science. Your website says futuristic ventures at the edge of possibility. I love that definition, which makes it even more difficult because you can't really go with a hunch, right? So before we start talking about conviction, do you want to tell us a few words about Lux, about the current strategy of the fund?
Yeah, I mean, I think you summed it up well. I like to think of our platform and our firm and our team as kind of, investing in kind of no idea too early and no idea too crazy. And on the early side, it really is, you know, seed and series A is bread and butter. You know, we do have larger funds now, but that just means it's the same philosophy of, you know, when and where we're investing. It's just larger checks and the ability to write, more checks and more capital into our companies. And we'll go even earlier than that. We'll start companies from scratch and incubate them here internally. And I've done a number of these in the biotech space. So I think that's probably a different kind of nuance around conviction, early stage company formation versus kind of seed series A, but I'm sure we'll get into that. And then on the kind of no idea too crazy, you know, if you looked at our portfolio, it is everything from drones to satellites to 3D printing, self-driving cars, virtual reality, artificial intelligence. It really is at the, you know, the cutting edge. Some people like to say science fiction to science fact, but it's important to note that, you know, one of the key decisions that we often kind of wrestle with is this a science project or is this science and technology ready for prime time? And so that's something where I do think it's probably a little bit of a gut feel we think this is the time is now, and we're prepared to go this early in order to build a business around this technology and this team, because that's what we do, and that's the pattern recognition that we have.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit maybe later. I hope we'll have some time to touch on how being so thesis driven helps with speed to conviction, but before that, you said hunches. So I feel like venture is like very much a heart, head, and gut kind of an investment, right? There's an art and science to it, but at the end of the day, you want to feel it, right? You want to feel it. You also want to think that you're feeling it because something in your head is telling you to feel it. But do you have a framework for conviction, quote unquote?
I'm going to go with no. I'm a little bit more amorphous around that. But I promise to the listeners out there that this wasn't a preconceived question that was a softball to me, because Ironically, one of the biotech companies that I started is a company that's focused on the gut-brain axis, and so your gut feeling and where your head is at and is intermingled and combined, right? So often that gut feel that we talk about is actually kind of technically some biological chemical processes going on. It really does depend on stage, and the scale of the business, right? Early on, when you're building companies from scratch or you're investing at seed, and even those two are different, right? When I'm building companies at scratch or incubating here internally, we do it really around thesis development. And so we'll pick an area that we think is underserved, underutilized, and undercapitalized. And we think it's a massive idea where in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time, it will be an enormous business and a completely new market or, an enormous market. And so how do we gain conviction in those, sectors and areas? I mean, we do thesis building, right? Like I'll speak to as many experts as I can. I'll speak to as many entrepreneurs. I'll look at existing companies that are out there and see whether they're a fit and it genuinely is of interest, right? I might invest in that company at the Series A stage versus kind of build it internally. So, that process is a little bit nuanced and different in terms of conviction. I'd say the one, piece of commonality across early stage, late stage company formation is certainly kind of conviction around team. And people and founders. And that one is, I personally feel less quantitative driven and more qualitative, right? It's a little bit about like, do I want to be working with this? Can I be working with this person? And do they want to be working with me for the next 10 years? It's very hard to do that in an Excel spreadsheet or under some framework. You can have your data points, right? Whether it's first time entrepreneur or second time entrepreneur or, where they've been prior and so on. And those things do help. But I think ultimately it's the kind of, seeing that person and interacting with that person or teams to know, do you want to be backing those people? And then I guess later stage, we have invested now with our later stage fund, in kind of larger scaled businesses. We absolutely obviously are wrestling down and diving into all the data rooms and the financials. And that gives us a lot of conviction in those types of businesses.
Yeah, that's interesting. This actually makes me think of something that we didn't talk about, that when you're talking about things that aren't quantitative, like how a team makes you feel, then that sometimes makes it more difficult to pass along that conviction to the rest of the team, right? I don't know how you make decisions at Lux, right? I don't know if it has to be a unanimous vote or whatnot, but that's a conviction that's a little bit more difficult to persuade by, isn't it?
It is. And look, we have 9 investment partners, right? And so every single individual is going to react, differently to every entrepreneur or founding team that comes in. Sometimes there's commonality in those and consistency in viewpoints of entrepreneurs. I'd say it's and teams. It's very rare, but sometimes we have 100% consistency that like we need to back this person. I'm not one for only talking about Lux, and I always talk about some of the interactions I've had with folks over the years. And I remember, I had a lunch with Josh Koppelman at First Round, probably 8 or 9 years ago. He was generous enough to give me some of his time. And I remember him talking about Nat Turner and Zach Weinberg from Flatiron Health. And they had just been successful in a company. I think it was a decent size outcome, $60 or $70 million. Josh kind of presented the idea of blank check entrepreneurs. I imagine he would have, different metrics and data points for why they were blank check entrepreneurs. And some part of that would have been just gut feel, right? Like I've worked with these people. I've seen them in the trenches. I know how they operate. I know they're going to be successful. And I just like that always stuck with me. I'm sure he's not the first person to think of kind of that, but like he was the first person to share it with me. And so, there are some people that are like that for our firm, which we will, whatever they do next, we will be backing, right? And so that's just ultimate conviction in the person.
Another aspect that I've been talking about a lot is everything that has to do with speed to conviction, right? Because we already know that the sooner you feel convinced that the entrepreneur in front of you is one you want to back, then the higher the chances you're actually going to do the deal. Either because it says something about your conviction in the first place or just because of the competitive landscape, right? But the speed of closing a deal has changed, right? It used to be 2 to 4 weeks for a competitive deal. Now it's half that. Like, have you had to change anything in the process?
I don't think we've had to Well, I'm trying to think about, I think everyone's had to change in the last 15 months or 18 months, given everyone's remote and virtual, right? Like it's just, so
everyone had to change literally every single aspect, right, of their lives. But yeah.
Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, I think gone are the days of the Monday partner. Look, we still have our Monday partnership meetings, but it, you know, gradually we've moved, we also have slots on, you know, on Thursdays. And the reality is like, if there's a call needed on a Saturday or a Sunday, the entire team moves for that. I mean, that's how quick this market is moving. So no doubt we will lose more deals because of the speed and the amount of capital that's out there. I think, you know, we're in a fortunate position where we have a growing kind of brand that is recognizable in our sector, where people are building in deep tech that they want to reach out to Lux. And so, you know, certainly there are, you know, there's aspirational firms and funds that we want to get to in terms of seeing every high quality deal, and that's what exactly, you know, that's the name of the game. But I feel like we're on a good trajectory there, that if it's in deep tech, folks will want to reach out to us or a partner at the firm to get a gauge on it. And so we will have the chance to run it down, whether it's 24 hours or 2 weeks. So, and then the other thing is, there are certain areas.
By the way, I have to stop you and say that it's ridiculous that 2 weeks was the extreme side of long for you just now.
Look, there's things that we've had that have gone on for months. And by the way, like, it also includes, you know, us continuing, you know, we've passed on early rounds and continued to work on getting into companies. And, you know, that was, you know, us saying we've made a huge mistake and we think you're building, you know, a once in a generation, once in a lifetime company. And a clear example of that, by the way, is Saji at Benchling, who my partner Brandon was banging the table for. And some of us, our early partners, had seen it and said, you know, we didn't see it, but very clearly now we were wrong and Brandon was right. And Saji is building a very large business. But I think to answer your question prior, or another way to answer your question is, you know, like, I fundamentally believe that venture is a people business, right? Like it is a relationship business. I often joke with people when they come to me because of my technical background, whether it's a PhD or an MD or science background, they're like, do I need a technical background to get into venture? And my experience is like, no, if anything, you need a degree in human psychology, right? and so I think if we're interested in certain areas, it's our job to get to all the right people and build those relationships. And so if you're not building those relationships, you won't have the ability to kind of move quickly. So we've lost deals because we haven't had those relationships prior, and that's on us. And so we then write those names down and we write those firms down and those entrepreneurs down, and we make sure we build those relationships for the next time. So I think that helps with the speed of conviction as well, because it's always hard to bet on someone that you've only just met for 24 hours.
And that kind of takes us to, I think, that one thing that trumps many others is, or maybe a mean of creating time advantage, is industry specific knowledge, right? A thesis driven investment strategy, having a sense of the industry, coming with relevant knowledge to the meeting. And how do you, and you said a few words about it before, but how do you think that helps not only speed to conviction, but also like how convinced you are?
Yeah, I think it helps in the sense that high quality founders and entrepreneurs right now are inundated with, I mean, look, capital I sit down with friends and I agree with them. Capital is a commodity, right? Like there is a lot of capital out there. And so how do you differentiate yourselves? And one of those ways of doing it is saying, you know, is presenting like, here's my knowledge, right? Like, here's what I know. Here's what I know about your business model. You know, and some of that comes down to time, you know, time and bandwidth of individual partners, the infrastructure of the firm. Look, embedded in your question right now, like the topical, you know, firm today is like Tiger Global. Like, how are they doing so many deals in such a quick amount of time and putting money to work? But like, I've seen some of the 70-page deal memos that they put together to send to our entrepreneurs prior, to say, here's what the work I've done on your business. So I think that's one thing that helps. You know, there are other things that help, but I certainly don't think you need to have a really, really, really deep, you know, technical understanding. I feel like it's a little bit more mile wide, inch or, you know, 6 inches deep or whatever it is, but rather than being, you know, full kind of, because then you get pigeonholed and limited into certain sectors, and the cadence, because you'd be focused on one thing and then the next thing. And I think venture is much more like, you know, multiple concurrent kind of theses and areas that you're investing in concurrently.
Yeah, and also I think it's like you said. I mean, the industry specific knowledge, the thesis, it helps with speed to conviction, but it also helps with, you know, with this competitive landscape that we work in, right? Because you could sit with an entrepreneur and he's like, yeah, this guy really knows what he's talking about. So I guess there are two sides to that.
Founders and entrepreneurs are unique human beings in themselves, right? And so part of our job as investors is to figure out what makes them tick. Now, it might be a 70-page deck of like, here's customer diligence that we've done, and here's, you know, 15 bullet points on where I think you need to go. Or it might be like who you know, helping them recruit, you know, some of their executive team, you know, without being an investor, or just generally being a helpful person and making connections to them. Like there's all these different things that make, you know, entrepreneurs and founders tick. And so, you know, it's our job to find out what that is.
What they need from us. Yeah, exactly. You were talking about human psychology before. And I feel like investors are very insecure creatures, right? Like we go with our instincts, but on the other hand, you know, we're looking at companies, there's a bit of bad news, and then we stop trusting our instincts. Then, and you sound like, you know, you're very much a person that goes with his hunch or gut. And, but did you ever feel like your instincts betrayed you? I mean, were there times where you said, well, I thought I knew something, but wow, did I make a mistake there?
Yeah. And I mean, we're going to be wrong 99% of the time, right? Or whatever, 90% of the time. The idea is to have the enormous returns and be right the 1% of the time and change the world that way. And so you're always going to be questioning yourself. And I, you know, I have conviction in certain areas, but at times I also, you know, I have a lot of, I don't know, I think you might have used insecurity or like I question certain things as well, right? And I'll also say on top of that, like I haven't trusted my gut at the time, and I've gone, you know, and I've tried to convince or overcome some of those concerns or worries and not listened, and that was the wrong decision as well. So these are all things that, you know, like these little pattern recognitions and data points that, you know, you add up to yourself that is a human being. It's like, and kind of progress towards the next investment.
Yeah, I think one of the problems is that it's always so much easier to say no, right? I mean, it's so much easier to get stuck on the reasons why not to do an investment. And I almost feel like, you know, an entrepreneur walks into the office, you know why you could be saying no even before he starts talking, right? And it's always the same reasons. It's too risky, it's too early, you still don't know, the market hasn't spoken. So it's just easier.
Yeah, and part of that then is on the entrepreneur to be the storyteller, right? Because as you just said, like most venture folks are pretty simple creatures, right? And they focus on certain areas.
That's because most venture people are men, and you guys are very simple creatures.
True, very true. Yeah, I think, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're like, these are people that want to invest in me at the highest, you know, at a certain level of risk, right? And then with that capital that they deploy or give me, the idea is to move to the next stage where the risk of being successful is lower, yeah. Right? And so as an entrepreneur, you want to be thinking about like, what are those things to lower the risk, whether it is market or whether it is team or whether it is product or whether it is, you know, financing risk and future financing risk. So you're right. Like we walk into pitches and coffees and conversations with a very kind of, almost, I mean, I would say most investors have a similar sort of framework, but it's the, you know, extra 20% on top of it that differentiates people. But those 80% still needs to be covered pretty clearly.
Yeah. So I made this joke in all the episodes before this, and I don't know if it's still going to be funny, but I'm going to use the F word. How do you deal with FOMO?
FOMO. I mean, it exists. It's very real. It's very real in today's environment. It's hard to not get caught up in it.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, I mean, in my experience, you know, time time will kind of tell a little bit. I mean, I've been in the industry for 10 years and it's been a bull market, right? It's never been a bear market. And that's not to say I know when it's coming or not or whatever it is. But, and so FOMO to some extent has worked, right? Like, and it is a little bit of a, you know, at times a club where, you know, folks are getting together. And so I think in our world, you know, in Lux's world, deep tech, like, it's certainly getting more competitive. It's certainly, you know, there's a higher quality of investors as well. So I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to measure between FOMO in our kind of areas of investing versus others, but it's there. And I think we're cognizant of it in the sense of not having any sort of investment slippage, you know, and sticking to our key kind of investment themes and sectors. But at the same time, appreciating that there are other areas that we could, you know, invest towards. So I don't know, what's your view on FOMO?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly the key, right? That what you need to understand, and maybe that's the only way to fight investors' FOMO, is to understand that there are a ton of phenomenal deals out there, but they're not all necessarily right for you, right? Because the right deal for you would be the one that you're passionate about, that fits in within your thesis with the team that you believe in. I mean, just understanding that not every deal out there is for you. Easier said than done, right? But I think that maybe that's the maturity level that you wanna aim to understand that some phenomenal deals are going to be done not by you, and that's perfectly fine.
Right. Yeah, and there are a lot of great investors out there, right, that are going to be really successful, multiplied by you know, a huge amount more amazing entrepreneurs and founders. So, look, my personal FOMO often at times is driven by kind of being, you know, psychotically competitive in the sense of like, it's less about like, why didn't I do that deal? It's more about like, I want my portfolio, like, because you very rarely, I mean, we feel like we invest in sectors that are, you know, N of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 companies, not N of 500. Yeah. Right. That like, but you can't have an N of one because it's a monopoly to some extent. I mean, there are some pretty N of one, close to N of one companies for us, but
maybe that gut to brain company, that could have been a
I think that's an N of one, but there are others that are competitive, right, that are doing microbiome or doing different sorts of you know, gut restricted, you know, therapeutics. And so a lot of the, you know, I get FOMO when those companies get, you know, a high quality investor, what are they looking at that one? Not when they're getting business development deals, those sorts of things. So it comes from a competitive aspect that I want, you know, I want my portfolio companies to yeah, be all of them to be dominating the world. And then the other thing, as I'll say, is it's part of the reason why I enjoy what I do at the earliest stage is when you create companies and incubate them, you know the path you're on, right? And so it's very hard to have FOMO there because you're creating your own thing. And you're bought into it or buying into it, and you're putting all these pieces together. And so it's kind of like you're not weighing deals off each other. It's kind of like this is the thing we're putting together. And so it's less FOMO in those sectors.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think we're still going to both suffer from FOMO, and that's just the name of the game, and that's perfectly fine.
Totally. It could definitely exist. Yeah. Everyone
I think it's a driver, FOMO, right? At the end of the game. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's also a driver. So there are three questions that all Kaufman podcast episodes end with, and I know it's hard to believe, but we're nearing the end of the episode. So I want your unfiltered thoughts. Don't overthink those, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm ready.
What makes a great VC investor?
I don't overcomplicate things. I would say the people that they surround themselves with, and not fearing uncertainty. A little bit what we were talking about before, right? So like, this is the people business, and you have to be okay with unknowns and things not working, right? And so, you know, the most important thing you have is that one-on-one relationship with your founder, and how can you help your founder? That is all people, right? And yeah, and all those, you know, ways that you can be, you know, I'm doing the inverted commas here, value add,
yeah,
is, I think, based in the DNA of that is people as well, right? Whether it's recruiting or other investors or potential partners, or, you know, it's all people.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree. What advice?
I passed the first question then.
You did very well on that first question. Yes. Let's see how you deal with the second one. So what advice do you have for our audience of VC investors and innovator? Or what advice would you give yourself 10 years ago when you were that naive postdoctoral fellow coming into, walking into the law?
I think if the sooner I realize what I just answered in terms of what makes a great investor for me means that, like, how do I build the best network of incredible people and surround myself with that? So that's what I tell, you know, summer associates here. That's what I tell people to, you know, that are in a PhD that want to get into venture. It's like, pick up the phone and get in, have as many coffees or Zooms, like build those relationships with incredible founders and other investors and cultivate those relationships. I think that's the thing that has been my mantra for what I do. Yeah, that's what I told myself 10 years ago, and that's what I continue to tell myself and other people that, you know, that I'm fortunate enough that they ring me and ask for advice.
Adam, you're in 2 out of 2.
Great.
How do you stay sharp? Are there any books, podcasts, blog that inspire you?
Look, if you ask my partner, Josh, who founded the firm, like, he's a voracious reader of all papers and and listens to podcasts. And, you know, I'm not that, right? Like, I'm pretty selective in what I do. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit strategic in nature of where I am and what I'm investing in, right? So, like, I was on a Zoom fire chat yesterday to a deep health tech group, and I think they were surprised when I said that I still get emails from some of the major science publications, right? You know, and so I'm still PhD science geek at heart. And so my latest gene therapy company came from me seeing kind of the papers being published and the mainstream media coming out of that. And so, like, I seek out areas that I'm personally passionate about and dive into those. And that could be either through podcasts, any medium, podcasts, you know, Twitter. I try and follow as many kind of, you know, I want to say like rock star kind of rebel scientists in the areas that I'm excited. And then just to see the things that they retweet or the science and the papers that publications that they're excited about makes me go down those rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the other thing that makes me feel that keeps me sharp is that, you know, I try and, venture and innovation is like it's a unique ecosystem in itself, and it's all consuming at times. And I think the one way to stay sharp is to exit stage left for periods of time, and, you know, and kind of live in reality at times to see what folks are, you know, real, like, family and friends are focusing on, and then you get a whole bunch of inspiration that way.
Yeah, I love that answer. The only thing you forgot to mention was the Coughlin podcast, but other than that, yeah, I totally
am. I'm on it. Okay. I promise not to listen to it at 2x speed as well.
Okay. Adam, this was fun as always. We're completely out of time, but very much okay with time. So thank you very much. We will definitely continue this conversation.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap. Tune in next week for another candid conversation on what makes a great VC investor with your host, the Kaufman Fellows.